Mr. Blackall, Reel 4. We were talking about the Churchill tank, and you were describing, you know, the engine and the layout of the tank. What about the layout of the crew and the armour and the gun? If you could comment on them, you know.
Well, the same. I made a mistake with the Covenanter, but in the Churchill, you had as co-driver. The second driver sat alongside of you, and he had a Beezer gun in front of him. He was more or less a second gunner.
The Beezer is a machine gun.
The Beezer was a machine gun, yeah. High velocity machine gun that was. But then in the turret, the chaps in the turret, there was a gunner, wireless operator, and the commander. The commander was the last man in the turret because he had to let the gunner go in first, who sat on a chair alongside the gun, looking through the sights of the gun. The gun was, as I said before, the gun was hydraulically operated from the engine. You couldn't operate the gun without the engine running. Because on the Sherman, the American Shermans, they were all electrics. That was why they caught fire so quick. They called them Ronson lighters. But the old Churchill, she was all hydraulic. Now the hydraulic spun the turret, and operated the gun up and down.
So the gunner would control that. The gunner would control
it. The gunner controlled the gun, yeah, the up and down and round. The tank commander, he was head and shoulders outside. If you was under fire, we lost a lot of tank commanders through that, head and shoulders outside. He had a visor. He had a visor which was very, very hard to see through because his lid was down on the flat of his head, being held down. And it was very, so that's why so many of them got killed. They preferred to be head and shoulders out of the gun. And of course the wireless operator, he had his headphones on and he was looking after the...
Was he the gun loader as well? The gun loader?
No, the gun loaded himself.
It was automatic, yeah, loading?
He had...
So he was shields, just on the wireless?
He had shields around him. And the radio operator, he would listen for instructions.
Now,
he relayed instructions to...
Would you all have headphones as well?
No.
So no. Just...
I wish we had it done.
There was no intercom then?
No intercom. It was all a tap on the shoulder or a kick in the back or something like that. But
now, what did you think of the armour and the gun and the speed and the, you know...
It was terrible.
And what was wrong with the armour then?
Well, you'll read it in the book.
No, what did
Churchill
you think?
The Churchill tank, to my mind, it was a good bulldozer. It would go through anything, and it would never get bogged down. It would climb a perpendicular wall, and go. But it had a pea shooter on the front as a gun, a 2-pounder, a 70mm. Which was against the Tiger and the German tanks, it was a pea shooter.
What about the armour?
It had good armour until you come up against the German 88s. And the German 88s would go through it like a load of butter. A co-driver killed alongside
me. Well, we'll come. Now, what did you... I mean, a lot of that's in the future in 1941. I mean, you wouldn't know about 88s, you wouldn't know about Tigers, they weren't about then. What did you think of the Churchill when you first got them?
Oh, we thought that was great. We thought the Churchill was great because we were protected. We were protected from everything until we got into action. And then we realised... You know, that we wasn't protected from everything. Because at that stage, we hadn't come up against the enemy. But...
That's fine. We'll come... That's great. Now, what about... So the first thing was learning to drive a tank. Now, did the tank driving include going over obstacles and over hills and, you know, over a rough training ground?
Oh, yeah. We done all that on Salisbury Plains. We we got up as much speed as we could, and we either hit an obstacle, or there was trenches dug that we wallowed in. We went in and climbed out at the other end. We went up embankments practically perpendicular, you know, to see whether the tank would slide backwards or not. But no, the old Churchill, she'd done everything. We went through obstacles that was built up in front of us and just pushed them aside, you know. As I say, we treated it like a bulldozer.
Did you have to watch for it tipping over in any way? I mean, would it tip to the side if you went too far, you know, if you went on a diagonal one?
The only thing you had to be careful of if you was driving at an angle, you didn't steer. Because if you steered, there was so much side drag on the tracks that you would tear a track off. You see, the little wheels, the bogey wheels that run along that teeth on the top of the track, that it only wanted one to miss, and your track's off. You see, so you had to think of that when you were the driver. The tank commander would give you all the orders on God's earth, but the driver, it was his responsibility. If he tore a track off, it was down to him, not the tank.
So when you were over on a side, you know, going on an angle,
we had to go straight. Where the tank wanted to go. You couldn't turn. If you turned, you could do it. And 9 times out of 10, you may get away with it. But there was always that possibility then of tearing a track off. Because the poor track was doing two things. It was going forward, and you see, the track had a series of teeth sticking up from it that wheels run over like sockets, but other than that you should go for anything.
Did you get thrown about a lot on an obstacle course inside the tank?
The chaps in the turret did, but you see the driver and the tank driver were in sort of bucket seats. You never had a belt, because nobody in a tank would ever tie themselves in, because there was times when you had to get out in a bloody hurry. And the tank driver and the co-driver always wore a tank suit. Well, on the tank suits that the army issued you, on the tops, and we didn't realise this until we see action, there was great big rubber straps, and that was... If you got hit or if you got killed in the tank, all they had to do was lift you out, and the tank suit became a body bag. They lifted you out as a deaden, which happened a lot of times.
What were the tank suits like in other ways? What were they like to wear? What did they look like?
Well, in the turret, they only wore their ordinary battle dress.
But as a driver, yeah. What would you wear? What was it like, the tank suit?
The driver and the other bloke on some training you didn't wear the tank suit.
But what was it like? Can you describe a tank suit for me? I mean, you told me about the straps, but what else about?
Well, you were zipped up. Your legs were zipped up. It was all zips. My wife could tell you this because she used one of my tank suits once. That's another story. But it was all zips. It was zips up. And you was sort of, it was like a body bag with these great big, we didn't realise until we did the interaction what it was for.
Was it warm? Or?
It was very warm, very warm.
Did you like them? Or did you think they were good?
We couldn't do much about that because when we were in training, the driver was always held down because the turret was always on the move, spinning round and that. And when the gun fired, you got the backlash. The driver got the backlash. You couldn't keep your visor. You had a visor down in front of your face. You couldn't keep that closed all the time because you was looking through, 4 inches of glass. You could barely see anything through it. And it was always smothered in mud and shit anyway.
So what was it like when the gun fired? For you as a driver?
Deadly. I'm suffering for it now, aren't I? And yet I can't claim. I can't claim anything because when I left the army and I went in, well, that's nothing to do with this. But
what about, you say you got the backlash. What was the backlash? Was it just sound or was it dirt and muck as well?
It's just the what do they call it, a vacuum, you know, the sort of explosive coming back at you. What do they call it?
Shockwave.
A vacuum, I suppose. Because the missile went out, and the explosive went out, and then you've got like a drawback. It hit you in the face if you had your visor open. But if you if they didn't always tell you that they're going to fire a gun, because it came unexpected when they see a target. Because they had these pop-up targets come along, and they had to traverse round and fire on them. The driver didn't know nothing about that. All the driver done, he was blind. You got your instructions from the tank commander.
Now, would you practice getting into a hold-down position? You know, where just the turret's showing over a hill. Would you practice that?
Exactly, yeah. You had to find... most places were dug out ready for you on training. But in action, you had to find your own cover.
Now, would this show you how to take up a hold-down position? You know, so just the turret was peeking over the top of a hill. Would you practice doing that?
We've done a lot of that on Salisbury Plain. But sometimes they left the driver himself to find that position, you know. But on Salisbury Plains, being a training ground, these positions was already marked out, you know, that they had they were dug out. And not only that, previous drivers had found a proper place, and the tank tracks were there, you know, showing you where to go. But you did. If the tank commander used to have a code word like find us a hole, or put us in a hole, and you had to find a place where, as you say, you more or less camouflaged the tank with just a gun pointing out. You might go under trees or something like that, or find an embankment, or with a Churchill you could push yourself into an embankment and make your own hole. As I say, you come back to a doings.
Now that driving was just one part of your training. Another thing you mentioned was maintenance. Tell me about tank maintenance and what you were trained to do.
Oh yeah, well the maintenance was. You couldn't do a lot of running maintenance. It was you had to keep your water up, keep your water forward, because you had two radiators. You had to keep and you carried water. You carried cans of water on the side. You carried cans of petrol, but you wasn't encouraged too much to carry petrol, because not in action. In training you carried them, but in action, I mean, they'd get knocked over. But, yeah, you carried your water, and you always carried a couple of bottles inside the tank for your own use, because, you know, the 4.5 gallon jerry cans strapped outside could get knocked off and knocked over.
So water...
Your oil and petrol, you lagered up at night. Every night, you lagered up.
That's in action. We're talking more about your training in tank maintenance now. So you had to keep
your... training, that was always done in the evening, you know. Before you put your tank to bed, you topped up with petrol, you topped up with oil, you topped up with water. That was all. And if you'd used any rounds during the day... You replace that.
That doesn't sound like you need much training to do that. I mean, you said a lot of what you said one of the big parts of the course was tank maintenance.
A lot of maintenance you could do, and unless you broke a track or anything went wrong.
Now, we just had a chat. You didn't do any tank maintenance training at Conference St. Mary's.
No.
You just did driving.
As a driver, yeah. But afterwards, later on in the action... When we lost all those tanks at Cormont.
That's 3 years later.
Yeah.
So,
You see...
When you were at Codford St. Mary's, what else were you training in?
Not a lot, only the using the tanks. Only the use of the tanks. Because you had trained people to do the maintenance on the tanks. And that's what they called recovery tanks. You had a recovery tank with no turret. But it was loaded down with... mechanics and tools.
So you were just learning how to drive.
That's right.
You said maintenance, but you didn't mean it.
The driver was drive the tank and answer instructions off the tank commander. Put your tank in a position where he can get onto the target, or put your tank in a position where nobody could see it from a distance. Now, when you're talking about me, I went to Vauxhall Motors at Luton.
Now, when did you go there?
Done a course. Well, during the training, they noticed that I was mechanically minded, and I was a good driver, and I could manage the tank as well as anybody. So they put me through to put me on a course of tank training, maintenance, at Vauxhall Motors at Luton, where we went and I stayed in billets at Luton Town and went every morning down to the factory and sat in a class and learnt the rudiments of the engine that they put into the Churchill tank, how to clean the plugs, how to take the plugs out, how to do the electrical, the coil ignition, how to service the tank. Then when I done that course, I became a vehicle mechanic class 3. It's all in my book.
Now, how did you maintain a tank then? I mean, what was the routine maintenance program for a tank?
Well, the only maintenance was if a tank got knocked out, you had to get it back fair means or foul. You had to repair the tracks and put the track on, or repair the engine if the engine was repairable.
And they taught you that at Vauxhall?
The Vauxhall Motors, yeah. That's how I became a mechanic. Because when we eventually went into action, I wasn't driving a tank. I was on a recovery vehicle. So I was a mechanic on a recovery vehicle.
Is there anything else about that tank training course in more detail? Do you remember any of the detail of what you learned there?
Well, what do you learn about an engine? It's just the rudiments of looking after an engine. If you get a petrol choke, you teach you how to clean the carburetor, how to take the filters out and clean the filters, and dismantle the pipes and blow through them and make sure that they're not clogged up. The ignition system, you clean the points. You take the points out and dismantle the points and clean it, because in them days they had the old-fashioned points that you took out and you cleaned them and gapped them and put them back, a proper gap and timing gap and that sort of thing. Take plugs out, wire brush them and clean them, or put them on a machine to clean the machine. Clean the plugs, make sure the plug leads are secure and not dropping off. The main lead to the distributor, but you see, you had two sets of plugs. You had one in action and one standing by in case the other one went out. And air filters, cleaning air filters. The entrance to the carburetor, you clean the filters out because you're going through dust and muck and everything, and they soon got mucked up. But you've done all that when the tanks are lagered up at night, after. Very rarely did a tank break down actually in action.
So that's what you were learning at Vauxhall. Anything else you were learning at Vauxhall? Was it mainly the engine you were learning there, or did you do the tracks there as well?
Well, there was the epicyclic gearing at the back, but if you knew anything about epicyclic gearing, you're a bloody maniac, because there's so many wheels within wheels. That's where the old saying wheels within wheels come along. There's millions of little star wheels all intertwined and rubbing against. You can't do much about them. If they go, they go. The tank's out of action.
What else did you learn at Vauxhall? Anything else?
Keeping the gearbox tucked up with oil, making sure the rods are all clear. Any connecting rods, any split pins to be looked at and made sure that they're secure. Tightening things up, because there's vibration all over the tank, things work loose. The hydraulics to the turret, you had to keep that topped up, look for leaks. Because with the hydraulics, you always get leaks because there's pressure in every pipe, isn't there?
Did you actually learn how to change tracks? Learn how to change tracks, sir?
Oh, yeah.
How did you do it, then?
Well, the tracks... You lay the tracks out under the sprocket, and you tow the track underneath all the little star wheels, as I call them, until you get to the end. You use your own tank to drag them along. Then you lift the end up until you can get it on a tooth of the epicyclic gearing, the gears. Then you start your engine up, put the track in, so your own engine turns that wheel, and you lead the track along all the top wheels until you come to the front, and it goes over down and meets its end, and you've got a pin, you've got a star pin that goes through, join it up, and you do the same operation if you're only putting a few sections of track in. I mean, what I've explained was a complete track, but if you've got a one section out, you just do the same effort and then put new sections in. Because a track is made up of just teeth, what we call teeth. Just sections, and each section has got a high tensile metal steel through it with a split pin, a big split pin, I might add, at the far end.
Now, how long did this course last for?
Oh, the course was about a month. I was at Vauxhall Motors about a month. And we'd done all that training, and we went through... Of course, I had the Churchill tank there, and we went through the track repairing efforts.
And then you'd be a driver mechanic?
Then I was a driver mechanic, yeah. And I was used a few times in action as a driver when poor driver got knocked out went ill. Now, I stood in. But other than that, we used to go up at night time.
That's when you're in action.
Yeah.
Now, you're still in England. Now, what happened next? And after you'd done this course, were you still at Codford?
Well, actually, yeah. We were at Codford, St Mary. And where did we go? We got Salisbury Plains, yeah. We done our training up there, blah, blah, blah. And then I think we just stood by D-Day happened.
At Codford?
At Codford,
so you were there for 3 years?
3 years? No. We done... I can't remember now what happened after that, between that and I can remember Salisbury Plains, and I can remember... Oh, we went to Thoresby Hall. That's
where?
Right. Up in Nottinghamshire. Thoresby Hall.
Happening there?
Yeah, that's right. We went up there with our tanks, because I remember the tank standing, and we stood by up there And at that time, there was an invasion of England, or there was a threatened invasion of England, and we had to stand by. That's right, it was at Thoresby Hall. It was a millionaire's place, and lots of ground around it. We had our tank stands there. Oh, that all comes back to me now. Yeah, Nottinghamshire. And we was training up there, because there was a lot of open ground. And we stood by, looking after our tanks, showing them off.
Now, can I just ask, just to finish for today, about Willie Whitelaw? Because, of course, he's a very famous politician, but he was then Captain Whitelaw. What was he like? Can you give us a picture of what he was like then for you?
Well, He was a sense of fun in them days, because he used to go around giggling, and he was always got a smile on his face and happy as a pig in shit, as we call it. And he mucked in with us. He sat down and had a sandwich with us and a cup of tea if we had a brew up. We called him Silly Willy, but that was wrong, because he wasn't silly. He proved that when we went into action. He was a brave man, and he was a clever man. He was in front of his tanks, head and shoulders out of a scout car, and he was directing all the operations that was going on. There was three tanks in left flank, right flank, and headquarters. That's 15 tanks. Now, Willie was out the front. I can remember a place.
Yeah, we'll come on to that more when we get onto the fact. But he was a good officer anyway.
He was a good, he was a great officer. Very understanding if you had to go in front of him. Mind you.